Hey, everybody. I am here with Devin Milan, none other celebrity stylist. I am so excited. We have a power-packed episode, and we are going to get right into it. I'm not going to delay no longer. I'm going to let her introduce herself and let her get started. Welcome, Devin. Welcome to my couch, Still Toast to Stilettos.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming. Now, how was the commute coming down here?
Little traffic. It wasn't too bad.
Have you ever been to Delaware?
Yeah, I actually work with a lot of people from Delaware. My hairstylist and my makeup artist is actually from Wilmington.
You want to give them a plug?
Yeah, make sure you guys check out Sam, I Am Focker Dean, and Golden by Nature. They're amazing. Like, literally, they do me for everything.
They come over with me. Big shout out to Sam. I know Sam.
Yes.
Big shout out to him. Okay, so you're familiar with Delaware.
Of course.
You know this is like the small city with big dreams, right?
Love that, yeah.
It's a lot of talent here, but it's a small city. So it's hard to, you know, make the connections. If you have that type of mindset where you want to kind of explore and get into the industry, this environment can kind of be a struggle. So for you to come here, and with your background, it really means a lot to me for you to come into the 302.
Listen, thank you for having me. Y'all are family. I appreciate it.
So tell me where you're from.
I am from Philadelphia. I was born and raised in Uptown. I'm an Uptown girl. I ended up moving to the suburbs in Willow Grove. So
okay.
I'm kind of like Nunu from ATL. Like, you know, I'm from the city, but I live in the suburbs. So I will go back and forth.
Your mom moved you to the suburbs? Your parents?
Yeah, they definitely. My mother's from Uptown. My dad's from South Philly. So I'm very versed. They had a store on South Street for 30 years. So growing up, I used to be a South Street kid. Like, I grew up and down South Street. All the businesses, they watched me.
Really?
From a baby, yeah.
Now, what store is this?
Rodeo Kids.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I'm
You a Rodeo Kids baby?
Yeah.
Listen, I bought plenty of Easter outfits from Rodeo Kids for my boys.
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
I'm a rag baby, yep.
So fashion is in your blood.
Yeah, from a kid. My mom was inspired. When I was born, I kind of helped give her that catapult and that inspiration to actually create a kids' clothing line. But prior to that, my dad used to have a boutique called Auto Boutique. He used to kit out the cars for the JBM. So he would put the Gucci in the cars and all that. And a lot of the drug dealers, they wanted clothes to match their cars. So my mom went to Harlem, and she ended up connecting with Dapper Dan. So, yeah, it kind of kicked off from there. And it went from adult clothing to kids clothing when I was born.
So this is somewhat like a legacy for you. Like, you are continuing the legacy that your parents started.
For sure. This has definitely been a passing the baton moment all the way.
So what was your first encounter with fashion? I know you said that your parents basically, you know, installed this into you from birth. But when did you pick up the baton and start rolling?
To be honest, I was my mom's first, so I was around it from a kid. I used to do children's fashion shows. I used to be in the studio with my mom when she was designing. My mom, she speaks fluent Russian, so all of our sewers were Russian. So they actually was like my aunties, for real. And I would just go be in the studio looking at the fabric. And I kind of caught a love for fashion when I was about, I'll say, 4 or 5. I used to be in the basement with my, like, little cousins and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would take fabric and I would put it on them. And I would have my parents and her girlfriends, like, line up. And I'm like, we're going to do a fashion show. And I would make everybody line up and we would do a fashion show in the living room. So I always knew that it was going to be in me. I just didn't really know my place.
You just know your place, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Did you go to school for fashion?
Absolutely not. I actually went to school for law and political science.
Did you do anything with that program?
One thing I could say, I did the Thurgood Marshall pre-law program at Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely was amazing. It taught me how to understand contracts. A lot of the deals that I do, I facilitate them myself, and I have my lawyer look over it. But I feel like I'm in the know. It definitely educated me. But when it came to fashion, not at all. I went to Google University. I always tell people that, Google University.
And Google University works.
Definitely
it works. It works. So what was, with you, with your family and your parents being so connected, what was childhood like for you? I know you said that you should watch your aunt. You had the South Street aunties, you know, your mom spoke fluent Russian. So you had this village, but what was that like with having, you know, your parents being like
him and her? when I lived in the suburbs, it didn't really matter. They didn't really care. Like, I honestly was an outcast back home. Like, where I lived in Willow Grove,
mm-hmm.
I was definitely outcast. They didn't understand the fashion. I would come to school with foxes and furs. They would call me Big Bird and Cookie Monster, like little stuff like that. But it was a great balance because when I would come to the city, I got so much love, like so much love to the point where I got embraced by a lot of people. So when I was about 14, 15, I told my mom, you know, I want to start doing events. So I actually did my first event at 15.
Really?
Yep. I told her I wanted to do a party. I went to one of my friend's parties in South Philly and I saw how it was. And I was like, I want to bring that back home. Like, we don't have that back home here. So she put the capital up and I told her, I'm going to flip it. Give me the capital. I'm going to give you your investment doubled. And I did that. I threw my first party. It was a fashion extravaganza. And I brought Philly to Willow Grove. So I think that was like...
That made Willow Grove respect who you were.
Yeah, it was on both ends. Like, it was... See, the people in Philly loved that I lived in the suburbs. It was almost like a vacation for them when they would come to my house. But the people in the suburbs wanted to be so...
In the hood.
Yeah, wanted to be in the hood. So it was that.
Why is it always like that? The hood people always want to go to the suburbs, and the suburbs always want to come in the hood.
No, for sure.
It's always like that.
It was definitely, but what I noticed, and I've been doing this since a kid, I'm a blender. I bring people together. I'm a connector. So it was dope, you know, bringing my suburban, you know, family and friends and blending them with my city family.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it was definitely great.
When you first moved from basically the hood to Willow Grove, did you feel like, was it like a culture shock to you? Did you feel out of place when you moved to the suburbs? Did you feel like, Mom, why did you move me here? It's nobody here that looks like me. I don't feel comfortable.
See, this is the thing. I've been in white schools since I was in second grade. So okay. I never went to school with black kids, even though I lived in Philadelphia. So I always went to school in the suburbs. So my parents used to literally use someone's address and commute until we actually moved. So I would say it was more so a culture shock when I went to college. Like, that was the first time I was actually around, like, going to school with black kids. But to be honest, I felt like it made me special. It made me stand out. Even though they didn't understand my culture, mm-hmm. I was really big on instilling it in them. Like, even when we would have school dances and stuff, I would bring all my Philly friends up. And like I said, I was a connector. I would blend everybody. So, yes, it was definitely a culture shock for me. But I looked at it as like a benefit, like a superpower. Like, you know, I was black and I had swag.
Yes, I love that. I like that. So, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm 30.
You're 30?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're my son's age.
I'm a little old head a little bit.
You feel like you got an old soul?
Of course.
So, what I like about what you just said, you said that you are a connector. It felt like at a young age you knew who you were.
I feel like I had to. I had very strong parents. Like, my parents were titans. Like, that's the reason why I don't go by my last name. I'm a Graham. My dad is Ronnie Graham. My mom is Kim Graham. And when I would go out, people, you know, our family had a big name, mm-hmm. you know. So mm-hmm. I felt like I had to, you know, maintain mm-hmm. a certain image, and I had to fill their shoes, but I wanted to find my own place. So that's why I dropped my last name and started solely going by Devin Milan, my middle name.
So image is a big thing for me. Still Toes to Stilettos is a platform that I created based off of, you know, my personal experience and my personal life. Steel Toes represents the grit because I was in construction. And I used to literally wear, like, steel toe boots and, you know, hard hats and, you know, safety, protective personal equipment, you know, mm-hmm. goggles, gloves, and things like that. And it was that particular industry, that field, that, you know, helped me pursue my dreams and, you know, helped me get to the shine. That's why I say it's the grit. It's the grit and the grind. And one of the things that I had to go through with, you know, realizing, you know, who I was. Like, I had the dreams, like you had the dream.
Mm-hmm.
I had the dream. I knew the things that I wanted to do, but I was still trying to figure out, like, who I was as a person.
Yeah.
Like, image-wise.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that could be very difficult.
For sure.
You know, trying to figure out who you are, what you represent, what are you about? What is your why? Like, what are you going to do? How do you even identify? And I'm not talking about, like, male or female identity, but, like, who are you?
Who am I?
That's who are you?
That's a great question. Who is Devin? Devin is a creative. I'm a free spirit. I'm a visionary. Like, I really think I have like ADHD. I just got diagnosed recently, but I feel like I'm literally like, I'm a free spirit. Like, when it comes to like my thought process mm-hmm. and the way that I think, to most people it would be a hindrance. Like, my mind doesn't stop at all. Like, it keeps going to the point where it keeps me up at night. And I feel like that's actually what kind of pushed me. Like, to be honest, I'm one of five. I have four siblings. And, you know, all of us went to school to be scholars. My older sister has three masters. My little sister, she had graduated from Howard. I was the outcast. I was the black sheep. I was the one that they thought was going to get in trouble, that they were a little worried about.
Yeah.
But I don't stop. You know, like, nothing can stop my show. I don't care what it is, who you are. I'm determined. And at a very young age, I've always carried that personality. Like, no matter what trials and tribulations I went through, I overcame. And I did it with grace.
I love that. I'm so inspired. It's so many younger people younger than me that really inspire me. You know, I grew up, you know, looking up to people that was older than me. And now that I have matured and now that I'm older, I find myself being more inspired and admiring younger people, because y'all have this sense of confidence that I did not have when I was that age. I had to go through things in my life for me to feel like how you feel. I definitely feel like how you feel right now, but can I say I felt like that when I was 30? Hell no. Hell no. So I'm really inspired and look up to you for this, having that level of confidence as such, because you were still very young. Like I said, I got a son your age.
Thank you.
But with that being said, let me go back. Let me rewind. You said you just got diagnosed with ADHD, ADD.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me just say something about that. I work with all ages across the lifespan. I own a child care center. So I work with children, right? So, you know, children come into the center, and, you know, some of them have developmental delays, and some of them, you know, have different behavioral issues and things of that nature. So speaking of, like, ADD and ADHD, I think we all suffer at some level with ADD or ADHD. It's all about being resourceful, being informative, and knowing how to handle it and cope with it. You understand? Now that we're older, we know what to do when we feel unfocused or we feel like we have, you know, a level of anxiety and we can't sleep at night. Because, girl, let me tell you, I couldn't sleep last night. It's many nights when I got something going on, I know I'm not going to sleep. It's like, Sharice, be prepared not to sleep. And it's this natural. And I just think it's a level of excitement. It's a level of, you know, being anxious. It's a level of, you know, feeling, you know, gratitude. And you just be up. And it used to get on my nerves. Because I want to go to sleep. I want to rest, but I can't sleep. And I just started to be receptive of it and just started to understand this is the life of a boss. This is the life of an entrepreneur.
It's a superpower.
This is more of a life of a dreamer. You know what I mean? My husband asked me, like, well, what are you trying to do? What do you want to do? And I'm like, everything. Everything I put my mind to, everything I dream of, that's what I want to do. And when I realized, like, once I conquer one dream, or when I conquered one goal, I had another goal and another goal and another goal. And I was like, once you start dreaming, you freaking don't stop.
No.
Like, once you start dreaming, it don't stop. Once you accomplish one thing, you go on to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. So there is no, like, what do you want to do? No, it's like, what am I going to do? I'm going to do everything that I want to do. That's what I want to do.
Course.
You understand what I'm saying?
No,
so I love that about you. This, the fact, like I said, of This confidence. This confidence is just exuding from you. I got to thank your parents. Thank Kim and Ronnie.
No, thank you. To be honest, I feel like you got two different type of people. You got people that become a product of their situation and their background and they have pity for themselves. Or you got people that turn their pain into power.
Period.
And, you know, that's who I am. Like, I went through things just because I grew up in the suburbs. I think it was even more of a wake-up call to me because I grew up around this. I was raised around this. My mother was going to award shows. She used to call me on the phone with celebrities. I went to Patti LaBelle's house at 10, and Patti LaBelle grabbed my boob and said, "Kimmy, she got boobs. Like, this is a legend." You know, so I feel like because I was exposed to it My biggest fear growing up was how to maintain it.
Right, how to keep
it. My parents made us hustlers no matter what. Yeah, we grew up privileged. Yeah, we had a nice home. But they didn't play having slouches. At 11 years old, I used to be hustling to the kids up there. I used to go to Philly, go to the hair store, buy the little earrings and little trinkets that I knew that the kids like, and I would double it. Back home, I was hustling at 11. Then when I turned 16, my mother told me, you're not having a sweet 16 until you get a job. And on my 16th birthday, I was at the mall looking for a job, and I got that job. You know, but, you know, I feel like a lot of people think, you know, if you don't have, you know, I feel like if you don't have, you don't miss it. But when you actually have it and grew up with it, that was my biggest worry is not only maintaining it, but not being able to
sustain it.
And also live up to their shoes. My parents worked very hard. They worked very hard to provide a life for us, and I appreciate every bit of it. I just told my mom that I appreciate you so much.
What you do for your mom for Mother's Day?
We actually created a studio for her fur line. So all of us, we banded together and turned one of the rooms in the house into a full-fledged showroom.
Really?
That was what she wanted, so.
Okay, so you seem like you had a pretty good life. You know, you had your mom, your dad. They poured into you. They invested in you. Tell me a bad story. Tell me a time, a rock bottom story.
Rock bottom was people losing faith. You know, going into this, I didn't know my place. My mother was a designer. My dad was a designer. You know, they built a huge name in the hip-hop culture of Philadelphia and New York. But now, I didn't want to be a designer. You know, I used to call myself a fashion coordinator. I didn't know what that was. It sounded good.
Right.
But I had no idea what that was. And I'm going to school. You know, I'm trying to get a law degree because at the end of the day, they kept telling me get a foundation.
But
I
couldn't. Big.
Yeah, I couldn't focus. Like, I couldn't focus. I tried my hardest, you know, and I took what I could from college, but I dropped out. So me dropping out when you come from a family of scholars, you almost feel like the failure.
Yeah.
So, you know, people were worried. They didn't know what I was going to do, how I was going to maintain. And while all my friends was going to Miami for spring break and they're buying designer bags and shoes, I'm going to New York working for free. Working for free. I'm literally taking the train, and I'm so blessed. My mom literally got a job at Amtrak just so I can ride the train for free back and forth. So that was such a blessing. But I would go to New York and literally work for people for free and come home and then work for $8 an hour at the Gap in Sunglass Hut, you know. And it was crazy. They really thought I wasn't going to make it because, you know, it's a different times. You know, they didn't really understand social media. They didn't understand, you know, a lot that was, you know, how everything was transitioning.
Right, right.
So them saying me work for free didn't make sense. So, yeah, my sisters used to be like, she's going to be living in grandmama's bedroom. So she, you know, and that really, I would say that was probably the hardest because I felt like I was disappointing my family, but I knew my goal. And I told them I would never be a bum, you know. So they just had to trust the process. So it wasn't until I got my first, like, that first break. Like, people don't understand. I was grinding for so long and doing stuff in the shadows. So when I finally got the opportunity to be a lead stylist, not only was I a lead, but I was able to bring both my parents on board for this project. And that was my first project with Atlantic Records. I did the Meek Mill Monster video. And again, had no idea what I was doing. I never did a pool by myself in my life. I didn't really know what the budget was. I didn't even understand the verbiage. But they always say once an opportunity presents itself, you must always be prepared. So it was either I was going to boss up, head up, chest out, or I was going to cower.
Yes.
And I didn't know what I was doing, but we figured it out. Google University.
Ruby say here, I still toast to stilettos. You got to lace up your boots and put on your hard hat.
Yeah, we did. We definitely did. And it was crazy because I was only there to style the extras. And like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. I called corporate Puma. I said, I'm working with Meek Mill. At the time, Meek had just did his deal with Puma when he had the Puma sneaker.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they gave me a $20,000 budget, told me to go to the Puma store in New York. And I was able to get whatever I needed. I went to Image on South. I told them I'm working with Meek. They let me come and get 8-Ball jackets, Fila sweatsuits, you know, Sergio something. I forgot the name of those.
Sergio Tacchini?
Yeah, those sweatsuits. Yeah, like, you know, I had to do my research. I called Dapper Dan. Dapper Dan sent us 2 sweatsuits. Like, it was a full production. And again, I had no idea, but I had resources, and I was grateful for those resources because of my parents. Like, it was, all I had to do was make the call. I called Zimmerman Furs. They bought $200,000 worth of furs. So now I go to the shoot. The extras is dressed better than the artists. So they stopped the shoot and literally switched everything over, had me take all the clothes off the extras and put it on Meek and his team. Yeah.
So this was your first project?
Ever.
How did you land that?
Spike Jordan is my god brother. So me and Spike grew up together. His mother, Sadia, she used to do R. Kelly and Iverson and Carmelo's hair growing up. So she was on tour with Jay-Z. You know, she was really the one that was like super in the industry. So as a kid, she used to call us on the phone with Melo and, you know, get us associated. And Spike just ended up being a big director. He grew up to be a big director. He started working with Reebok. Then he started working with Meek, and eventually now he works with everybody. Future, Uzi, everybody. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy. We're second generation kids of, you know, of that hip hop culture.
Yes.
But now we're creatives.
So give me a list of some of the people that you have worked with.
Okay. I would say some of the most relevant. I did Kanye West, Yeezy Season 3. I worked with Rihanna for Paper Magazine, the Break the Rules cover. I've worked with every label, Atlantic, Sony, Roc Nation, Republic. Some of the artists that stand out to me is Koi. I worked with Lotto, Lakia, J. Cole, Moneybags Yo, and Ali Choppa. Who else? One of the things I'm really proud of, I recently started to branch off into marketing and advertisement.
Okay.
So, one of, the biggest things that, it still is crazy to me today, I did a Cheetos commercial for Pepsi, and I ended up was able to work with Mims, which was amazing. I was a lead for that. I also just did a commercial with Google Pixel with Lakia and Mass Appeal. Who else have I worked with? My resume is
a lie.
Yeah, my resume.
That's why you going down the list.
Yeah, I had the 50 Cent Cuban. I did a great rollout with 50 when he did For Life and Power. That was amazing. Meeting and building a relationship with him.
What was that like with 50?
It was great. People think he's mean. He's probably one of the nicest people.
50 is really cool.
Yeah, people I met. And he's not just nice to women. He's nice to everybody around him. One time when I had went to one of his premieres, I brought a date with me. And, you know, at the end of the day, when you go into a dressing room, a man, if you don't know another man, they're going to stand outside. And 50 walked out and invited him in and brought him into the men's conversation. It was him, Tony Yayo, Uncle Murda, Mike Knox, and 50. And it was just great to see. Like, he saw him with me, and he embraced it. 50 gave me relationship advice. Like, he's just a cool person.
Speaking of relationships, are you in one?
No, right now I'm single.
You're single. Are you in a single, like?
Am I dating?
Or do you want to be in a relationship, or are you just enjoying a single life right now?
To be honest, I had just got out of a 6-year relationship last year, and I feel like right now I'm in the process of finding myself by myself. You know,
I like that, yes.
A lot of the times you get so invested in each other, and don't get me wrong, you know, it had its moments, but I'm now finding that new freedom, and I'm just really investing into work right now.
And I think that's good. I think that's good, you know, for you to take time out to find yourself and to figure out yourself before you want to, totally give yourself to someone else. It's so easy to, you know, fall into relationships and to fall people that you vibe with and that you can, you know, have fun with and, you know, build with. But when you don't fully know yourself, you can't be what you need to be to someone else. And then that kind of just kind of crashes out.
For sure. And I think that was something when I got out that breakup, that was something that I had to learn. Everybody kept saying, love yourself. And I'm in the line of service. No matter what, I'm a celebrity stylist, but I'm still in service. I build people up for a living. I make people feel beautiful. But sometimes you have to have someone, you have to feel beautiful.
Exactly.
Too.
Yes. Who's going to pour into you?
Exactly. So that was something that I had to figure out stepping outside myself. When you're in this line of work, you get so busy, you know, building other people that you take from yourself. So it's easier said than done. You know, people say love yourself, and it's like, yeah, how? like,
How do you do that?
And then, you know, you could be as confident, and I think it's even more of a crazy feeling when you have that popularity and you have, like, everyone around you wanting to be around you and wanting to, you know, be in your space, but you just want that genuine love. Sometimes I don't want to be Devin Malone. I just want to be Devin.
Devin. So what you, like, being, like, a kid who just grew up in this industry, what type of men, what type of guys do you like? Do you go for, like, the industry guys, or do you just want a regular person?
To be honest, I've never really dated in the industry. Like, I've never dated any of my clients or nothing like that. Or I kind of indulged before, like, dating someone of influence. Yeah, you know. I'm going to say, you got to know what you're getting yourself into on both ends. Like, at the end of the day, a man dating me, you have to be a strong man. You have to be confident.
For sure.
You have to be secure with yourself. You have to know yourself, because it takes a strong man to have a woman that... I'm in a male-dominated industry. So, even... And I'm cute. So, it's
period.
Like, you know, I have to stand tall. I have to, you know, have a certain militance about me. So, even when I meet men, or I work with different men, especially when I'm in a relationship, it's straight handshakes. We not doing hugs, you know. I got to keep that
boundaries,
that, you know, that up. So it definitely takes a strong man to be able to date someone. But I also, to me, my type is, I like artists. I like you to be secure. I just like you just to be a good person. Like, I'm not really pressed on the industry people. Now, if you're like a guy that's normal and cool, and you just so happen to be
being
in the
industry
and have, you know, a lot of capital, that's just a bonus. But, you know, you got to be a good person. Like, I've had a lot of influential people try to deal with me and talk to me. And although, you know, they're beautiful people, it might look good. Some of them have millions, but I'm not even going to set you up. I already know it's not my cup of tea, and we can look great together, but I like mental stimulation. I like you to mentally, you know, me to fall in love with you mentally, then the physical comes.
Because that's the other stuff. You used to it anyway.
Like, I get treated great by my clients regardless, you know.
I mean, by
parents.
Your parents, but
yeah,
I just feel like you come from the upbringing where what might impress another girl that would not impress you.
For sure. I think, like I said, what impresses me is character, how you treat me, how you conduct yourself as a man. You know, I've been around people that weren't as financially stable, but they've given me a gift that I could never.
Priceless.
You know, it was priceless. Like, I dated someone, he wasn't financially stable, but the gift that he gave me was he was invested. Those times that I didn't have the energy to go to those shoots, or I felt defeated, I wasn't mentally there, he was there.
He was there for
you. He was coaching me. He was, come on, we're going to do it together.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he did not have the capital, the fact that you cared enough to push me and help get me there, you were shooting with me in the gym, as Drake would say.
Yes.
I appreciate that, because that helped, you know, build me up to who I was.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It's not always about money. Like, people, and it's not always about money or influence.
At all.
Yeah.
At all. So tell me, since you work with all these people, is there anybody that you, like, least like to work with? Like, who was, like, your most troublesome client?
Jocelyn Hernandez. And she ended up being cool afterward. I thought I was being punked. I'm gonna be honest. So my name's Devin. So before I'm just now posting myself, but before it was always my work. So a lot of people thought I was like, you know, like a boy or
okay.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So she hired me. She found me on Instagram. She hired me. She flew me out to Atlanta. And I came on set, had my little stuff, and she had me sitting there for like 5 hours. And it was like an outdoor set, so it was sweltering, like hot. But, you know, I'm a new stylist. I'm just hungry to get any job.
Yes.
I got flown out to Atlanta, so I'm just like, I feel great. She comes on set, and she's cursing out her hairdresser. I mean, saying vulgar, crazy things to him. And I'm just like, okay, you know. And then she looks at me, and she's like, who is this woman? Who is she? Who are you? Why is she here? And I'm just looking shocked. I'm waiting for the camera crews to come. I'm looking like, Johnny, this girl got to be kidding me. I know she cannot be this crazy. No, she really
is. She really is.
She really is. She really didn't know that I was the stylist that she hired. So I'm from Philly at the end of the day. We only gonna take but so much. So I'm just like, yeah, before this ends up being something, let me pack my little stuff up. And I just went to the side and I waited until like a moment where like stuff calmed down. Cause I know a lot of the times when working with rappers and artists, they get in artist mode. Like, that's why it's really big for you to understand the psychology of people and just understand how to deal with people.
Yes, because human behavior.
You can crash out because someone right now, they're in artist mode or they're not in their right state of mind. Or some of them, they get too excited. It's a project coming up. Yep. You know, they get flustered. People don't know how to understand power. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they react on other people. So I took a step back. I reevaluated the situation. And when I saw she was calm, I reintroduced myself. I'm Devin Milan. And that's when all that craziness, she took all that back. She apologized. She took me to dinner. You know, she was real cool. So I'm not going to say she's a terrible person, but the way that she did come off was a little crazy. It was definitely like the TV show, for sure.
For
like,
sure.
She's not faking it. That's her.
That's her real personality. Sure. That is not TV. That's her on and off the screen.
Absolutely.
Did you work with her again?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, so tell me who you like the best that you work with. Who did you really enjoy working with?
Who did I enjoy working with?
Tell me who you work with that not only did you style them and it came out, but they left like a lasting impact on you. Like they might have dropped some jewels on you. They might have motivated you. Did you work with anybody that made you feel like?
I feel like that was recently. My Jamaican client, 450, this is my first time actually working with someone international. And they just, it was just the way how they just appreciated my art and mm-hmm. my craft. Mm-hmm. And, like, they were just, it was just a great team. Like, the whole team overall, like, it made you want to see more by how, not only about how they treated me, but how they cared about the project. And I feel like when it comes to this industry, especially when working in music, people forget when you have a team, yes, you're the star, but everybody else that's around you, that's pushing into you, we're just as equally invested. So a lot of the times, like, people don't understand, and artists don't understand, I'm always going to have another you. I'm a stylist. So just if you don't work out, there's always going to be another you afterwards, you know? Mm-hmm. But a lot of the times when you're invested and you're fully invested in these clients and they fall or they don't do what they're supposed to do to succeed, you feel that. And it's nothing like watching somebody work so hard and they get dropped from a label,
yes,
you know?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
you see them not live up to their full potential. Mm-hmm, or you mm-hmm. see them, a lot of the artists I know, they don't even take it. They're so content with, they hop their Hollywood before they're Hollywood. You know, they're content with first class when we could be on the PJ right now.
Right.
You know, so mm-hmm. I feel like with me, when it comes to like working with what I could take from a client is actually working with a great team, working with someone that actually cares about this, that cares about themselves, that's fully invested, that trains for this. You know, a lot of people, they work hard to get here, and once they get here, they get complacent. They get comfortable. They forget the same tools and strategies that they use to get them here. You're supposed to turn it up, not, you know, get to a certain plateau and just... What is it? Is it peak or when do you just keep going?
It's plank.
Plank, yeah.
It's plank.
So, you know, so I would say when it comes to, like, the clients I work with, Rihanna was great, too. She treated us amazing. And I would say the person I probably learned from the most was Kanye. I'm not going to lie, yeah. Kanye was probably the most. I didn't understand. Yeezy Season 3 was like a video game, fully a video game. Like, it felt like there was a different level and we didn't know how we were entering it. So people don't understand, Yeezy Season 3, when he did it at Madison Square Garden, Kanye is such a genius. He sold y'all an aesthetic. It wasn't the clothes. The clothes that was really sold from Yeezy were boots, Sherlins, and sweatsuits. Everything that you guys saw in that mountain of people was thrifted items. There was literally... Everything was just dyed, thrifted items. So when people thought all 1,500 of those models were styled and Yeezy, no, they weren't Hanes t-shirts. It was Joe's Crab Shack t-shirts. It was jackets and Carhartt that was just dyed a certain color. So I feel like what I learned from working with Ye was perception is everything. And I feel like that's probably one of the biggest things that stood out to me, for sure.
With that being your perception of him and you feeling like you learned a lot, and he's a genius. And I agree with you. I think, you know, Ye does have a different eye lens.
For sure.
That we cannot understand, you know what I mean? And you have to really be, you know, up there with him to even kind of get a little bit of understanding of where he's coming from. Because, you know, everybody think he is crazy and he's this and he's that. But now with Ye being in the media and on every other day and on the Shade Room, and you know him personally, and then you seeing the things that he's doing currently, how, what do you say?
I'm not going to lie to you. A lot of the things that he's saying and the points that he's making are valid, but it's a way that it's your delivery. And right now, I'm a Gemini. Me and Ye's birthdays is a couple days apart. I from his music to the things that he says, I understand. But we also, there is a thing called mental illness. And sure, yeah. I feel like right now he's having a manic episode. And I feel like because of his position, like people don't understand when you're in power or when you have a certain influence, people would rather be your cheerleader than your teammate. People would rather cheer for you and they'll stay on the sidelines and yay. And then when you fall, oh. But no, you need teammates. Help
somebody to lift you up.
You need real teammates. Yeah, and right now, his team is letting him down. This is clearly some of his antics, the way that freedom of expression is everything. You know, you could do that. And I definitely think even him calling out some of his best friends, I've been there. Sometimes when you feel like your back is against the wall and you feel so defeated and you feel like you've invested in people so much and people just don't care about you, you know, you do go off the wall. You crash out. But what we're seeing right now is to me, this is manic, definitely manic. And this is a person who suffers. I suffer from mental illness. So I can tell you, I know when I was having my manic episodes, when I was snapping out, about to crash out, you know. So what we're seeing right now, it's not taken away from the things that he's saying because he's very violent, but it's a way to do things. And I feel like right now his team is failing him, for sure.
Damn. I agree with you. I definitely agree with you. And when you know mental illness, you can definitely see the signs.
For sure.
You can, and then it's really hard when, because he's an adult. You know, when you an adult
Super
and
adult,
it's
yeah.
and it's mental illness, it's like, I can't make you do anything that you don't want to do. We could tell you you need help all day long, but right. We can't make you go get the help. We can't make you go see a doctor. We can't make you go admit yourself. We can't make you go talk to the therapist until you really want to go talk to a therapist, unless what? You are seeking to harm yourself or someone else. Mm-hmm. So then there's another, you know, moving component of that. You know what I mean? Because maybe his team is encouraging him to get help, and he might be like, I don't need no help.
For sure. Like I said, it's a lot of different factors to that, especially, like I said, when you have money yes. and influence, mm-hmm. people care about you. Don't get me wrong. But people care so much about what you may think of them.
Yep.
So they're scared to say those certain things. Mm-hmm. Like with my mm-hmm. team, I'm not gonna lie, I had a lot of yes men. It almost kind of scared me. I had a lot of people that would just agree with me and, yeah, Devin, or just pipe me up.
And let you crash out.
But when I started to realize, like I said, it was counterproductive. I don't need cheerleaders. That's cheerleaders.
Yes.
That's what you're there for.
Yes men.
I need teammates. Mm-hmm. And the people, like my, I don't have a big circle around me no more. Before, I used to have an entourage. Now, I started to realize people were around me more so, not even just for what I could do for them, but, you know, from what they can gain. And I'm all about, you know, uplifting. If you're around me, I want you to take what you can from me and seed it into yourself. But what I noticed is it was counterproductive to me. So I needed people that was going to hold me accountable. I needed people that were going to tell me when I was wrong, that was going to, you know, just be real with me. So, yeah, I have a smaller circle. But the circle that's around me now is genuine. Like, one of my best friends, Nikki, she calls me on my crap. And even though we might go toe-to-toe, I appreciate it.
You appreciate it.
For sure.
Do you take constructive criticism well?
Yeah, and no. Sometimes, I'm going to be honest. I'm a real nigga at the end of the day. Like, at the end of the day, I'm real. So even though I might be, like, wrong, and I know I'm wrong, and they come at me, like, I'll take it, especially when it comes to certain things. I'll take it. I might try to have a rebuttal because I want to get out the situation, even
right.
though I know they right. I just don't want to deal with this conversation right now. I'm a runner when it comes to certain things like that. But at the end of the day, when they call me on my stuff, even, like I said, I could be bougie sometimes. I could be a little delusional sometimes. And especially, you know, when it comes to the significant others, I could get a little delusional.
For sure, for sure. So I think we all do.
That's when they really bring me back to life. So I take it. Like, if they call me like, Devin, you was being a little bougie today. You was being a little mean today. You was doing this. It's like, all right.
All right, my bad. I'll do better tomorrow.
Yeah, I try. I'm human. Yeah. But I got good intentions.
Yeah, good intentions. And that's one thing. Taking accountability is important. You know what I mean? Taking accountability, that just alleviates all other... anything that could come behind
even
that,
too,
listen.
Even with taking accountability, like I said, we're human. Like, sometimes it's just saying I'm sorry or I apologize. Yes. Even if I'm sorry I made you feel that way. You know, it might not have been your intention to make someone feel that way, but those little things matter. Like, even that's something I'm doing now is being more in the present. I think sometimes I get so caught up in hustle mode, grind. Like,
yes, yep.
When
moving,
you're
motion.
In this by yourself, I don't have a manager. I don't have a publicist. I don't have an agent. So I got to hunt. In order to eat. See, people, they can, when they're in their 9 to 5s, they can clock out and worry about everything else. No, I got to hunt all day, every day, or I'm not going to eat. So sometimes I get so caught up in hunting and hustling that I forget about the human aspect of this. Being attentive, caring about your friend's feelings, saying happy birthday, you know, things like that. I noticed, like, it got to the point where people don't really invite me to, like, game nights or cookouts or baby showers because they think how I perceive myself on Instagram, how I push myself on Instagram, they think I wouldn't enjoy these things, which those are the things that actually keeps me most grounded. I love
yes.
that type of stuff.
Regular stuff.
Regular stuff. So I learned that sometimes you can be too high where you're out of touch. And it's crazy. I was in Houston and this gentleman had said something to me and it stuck with me. He said, when you're a boss, you got to be on the balcony, you got to be on the dance floor, but you have to find that balance because sometimes when you're on the balcony and you're overlooking everything, you're too out of touch with what's going on the ground. But also when you're on the ground and you're in the mix too much, that's when sometimes those lines can get blurred of the hierarchy. So we got to keep that middle. So I feel like sometimes I got too caught up being on the balcony that I didn't have my feet 10 toes down. I wasn't really knowing what was going on. I was out of touch with not the industry, but my people, my friends, my family. So now I'm making it a point to find that balance. Like, that's very important to me now. Showing up for people, being there, acknowledging people, acknowledging birthdays, the little things, graduations. Like, that type of stuff is so important.
This is amazing. This is great. This was great. This was great. I'm kind of speechless a little bit. You said so much. I just, like, lost my train of thought. But what I will say in concluding this amazing interview is you gave what needed to be gave. You have embodied what Steel Toes to Stilettos is about.
I appreciate that.
Besides Steel Toes to Stilettos, I also have another brand, which is the Rebuild Your Life brand. I have a planner somewhere behind me. I have a planner and a journal, the
Love
Rebuild
that.
Your Life planner, the Rebuild Your Life journal. And to make a long story short, the Rebuild Your Life brand is all about, you know, going back and, you know, busting a Yui and going back and getting those dreams that you left on the back burner for me. And for a lot of others.
Yes.
For you, your story sounds a lot different. And I like your story. And I like what you put out there. I like what the people are going to hear because they could be very much motivated, very much determined and ready to hit the ground rolling from just listening to you. You're young. You're vibrant. You've had a lot of good jewels, a lot of good information. And like I said, it just represents what my whole brand is about, the Charisse Monique brand, the Steel Toes to Stilettos, the Rebuild Your Life. You was a perfect guest. And I'm so excited. Did you hear this? She worked with Riri, Ye, Lotto, my girl Lotto, Kia. I mean, she named everybody that we watch on TV. And guess what? I'm sitting right on the couch next to her, right in Wilmington, Delaware. Like, period. Period. And that's what I'm talking about. When I say Steel Toes to Stilettos, when I say Rebuild Your Life, I myself would have never, I'm not going to say would have never, but I dreamt this day. You know what I'm saying? This day right here, sitting next to someone as impactful as this, someone who can pour into you, someone who can say, I did it, and so can you. Like, this is what I dream for. This is what Steel Toes to Stilettos is all about. It's about putting on those boots, putting on your hard hat, and hitting the ground running, rolling, not being scared, leading by faith, investing in yourself, and you will find yourself right here speaking into people, speaking into you. You spoke to me.
Thank you.
Like you spoke to me, you have encouraged me to keep going, to not give up.
Listen, my mom just turned 60, my dad is 75, and I still work with my parents to this day. We just did Fashion Week, and it was such a beautiful moment for, like, my mom took it to a certain level, you know. She was, like, in the hip-hop community. I'm now taking our name global. I'm taking this to a whole different room. I was just at the Met Gala with Rihanna. Rihanna walked up to me.
You was there?
I was at the Met. It was a full fillet. I mean, I was shocked. And you want to know what was even crazy? Our fur line is called Lulu James. And I pulled up in a black truck outside of Tiana Teller's party. And as soon as I hopped out the car, I'm so, you know, like, I'm still, even though I've been doing this for so long, every little level up, every acknowledgement, anything is so appreciated. Because, like I said, when you work hard and you really did that and you put yourself on it, put yourself in that position, you know, you just appreciate everything so much more. And when I hopped out the car, one of the paparazzi, not only did they know me, they said Lulu James. They recognized our line. They recognized us from New York Fashion Week. And for us to take on something new, you know, we're no longer doing Rodeo no more. Lulu James is a brand new brand, a brand new transition. Us not only being black women, but we're black women in the fur industry. And for us to be recognized, be invited to show 3 years in a row, every time you get invited to show at New York Fashion Week, you have to spend between $15,000 to $20,000 just to participate. That has nothing to do with production. For us to be sponsored and invited 3 years in a row is crazy. And for me to be able to have a passing the baton moment, to have my mom now showing her line at Fashion Week from the connections I made, from the stuff that she instilled in me, is a blessing. I can't ask for nothing more.
And I feel that, like, I'm so grateful for you. I'm so grateful for your mother. I'm so happy for you that you just get to even just live that type of life, even just to get to experience those type of moments. I could just imagine what it felt like just pulling up at the Met Gala, getting out of your black truck, and they like, Lulu James.
I wanted to cry. I was stuck. I almost didn't get into the party because I was so busy, stuck at the paparazzi.
You crying now?
I got a tear going. Yeah, it's crazy. It's happy tears, but like I said.
For sure, yes.
It's a full circle moment.
Like I love that. I love that you're crying. Yes. Yeah, it's a full circle. And it just lets me know that, you know what I mean, that you are very much humble. You are so humble. Like,
I appreciate that.
So humble. Like, it doesn't matter what you have done. You still know that there's much more to do.
Yeah.
And you are not taking this for granted. Every opportunity, every moment is still like the first moment.
This is legacy. I'm a Gram. So my parents worked very hard to be able to instill a comfortable life for us. So if that is something I can do to be able to amplify all they put into us, that's nothing.
So you know your girl used to model, right? You know, that was like one of my first dreams, a model, when I had to leave my modeling dreams alone because I wanted to go out here and have babies and stuff. But you know, I can still walk on the runway. You know,
Of course. You embody what Lulu James is. It's timeless.
So listen, don't.
Timeless fashion.
Let me know when the next casting call is.
I got you. No, for sure. I'm so serious. Me and my mom go back and forth because she wants models that embody real life, people that embody real life. And you are definitely, you're sharp. You got the sharp haircut. You are definitely what embodies Lulu James.
Y'all gonna see me, Lulu James. Y'all, I am just totally fulfilled today. Totally grateful, totally fulfilled. I cannot express, you know, what I'm feeling right now on the inside. Like, my dreams are coming true as I speak. Normally, I'm crying. I didn't cry today because every time I come on TV, I cry myself. So to see you cry and me not cry was like, oh, I didn't cry today. Good. But I cried too. Like, at the drop of a dime, I'll cry. The right moment, the right feeling. It's like, oh my goodness. But yes, y'all, dreams do come true. I just want y'all to never give up on your dreams. Never give up. It can happen. It can happen. As long as you got breath in your body, it can happen for you. Do you want to leave us with any lasting words?
Just thank you. I appreciate you guys for having me. A couple mantras that I do use, and this is just something that's been keeping me afloat. Rock bottoms builds champions, and once a mind is stretched, it can never go back to its old dimension. So one thing I encourage, and one thing I'm big on is you know, I want to seed into the next Devin Milan. I want to open the doors for the next creatives because I know how hard it was for me coming from Philly. So one thing I always want to push to people, never become a product of your situation. That's just something that's temporary. Never hold yourself back. I see so many people always say, once I get here, then I can do it. Once I do this, no, be like Nike and just do
just
it.
Just do it.
Just do it. Just do it. So yeah.
Y'all heard her. Be like Nike and just do it. Well, that's it, guys. We have concluded today's episode of Steel Toes to Stilettos. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow Devin Milan on, what's your socials?
I'm Devin Milan on all platforms, DevonMilan.
And you guys know where to find me. I am Charisse Monique and Steel Toes to Stilettos. Over here, Steel Toes to Stilettos is all about the grit, to the shine, and right now we shining, 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 y'all. We'll see y'all the next episode. We out.
See ya.